talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. And we're going right to the front lines of history in the making. A lot of it made. Let's get right to it. By the way, I'm going to start with something local. Something affects the state of Wisconsin. Remember a fellow named Bob Donovan, a former alderman in Milwaukee, who'd been a Democrat all his life, labor-oriented Democrat from the south side of Milwaukee. I know Bob Donovan. He got increasingly conservative as the years went by. Always liked him personally, but in any event, Bob Donovan has just announced that he is going to switch to the Republican Party, and he's going to run as a assembly candidate for a district, including Greenfield, Hales Corners, some of the southern Milwaukee suburbs in this fall's election. Now, Bob is no spring chicken. Bob is long of tooth, very, very long of tooth. However, Bob feels that he has something to contribute, so he's going to run, and obviously his name recognition, he may well win. So there are shifts going on in both parties. Bob ran for mayor, and against Cavalier Johnson, I think he got roughly 30% of the vote, drastically outspent, and Bob has run before. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens twofold. One, can the Democrats put up a strong candidate? If we can, which is great, that's a conservative area, the southern Milwaukee suburbs, Hales Corners and Greenfield in particular. The other thing about it is that will Bob Donovan have a primary opponent? Will he have a primary opponent? The incumbent Republican has decided not to seek re-election. So it seems to be a Republican seat. And after this gerrymander again, maybe it still will be. But who knows? Because Bob has been on the ballot and came up short. Could be that he'll come up short again. It could be that he'll win. If he does win, it's going to be funny because he's going to go over there. And I don't necessarily see Bob knuckling under to Voss or knuckling under to some of these right-wing donors. He may talk the talk and walk the walk for a while, but he's an idiosyncratic personality. and if he's the guy that goes over there, stay tuned. So you cannot get rid of Bob Donovan. Apparently he feels called upon to serve again, and that's what he's going to do this fall. So and you know, quite frankly, there have been so many resignations. I shouldn't say resignations. There have been so many announcements in that assembly over there of Democrats and Republicans saying, we're not going to run again. We're going to see one of the biggest turnovers in Wisconsin history in our state legislature. That's not all bad, by the way. We get some new blood in there. The problem is we will be getting in very thin blood because of gerrymandering. And so too many of these seats have been gerrymandered to ensure Republican victories. And the question is going to be in their primaries, how extreme are these people going to be? One of the problems with gerrymandering, it's very, very little commented on. I'm going to comment on it right now. When you have extreme gerrymandering, it's not just that you give the Republicans control of the legislature for 10 more years, which will give them effective control from the year 2010 to 2030, a fifth of this century, 20%, simply by gerrymandering, and simply impede progress in Wisconsin, continue to attack democracy and the Wisconsin idea. It's a very, very sad thing, and it was enabled, frankly, by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which was in turn enabled by that race several years ago, where Brian Hagedorn got in, even though he was an underdog. And I'll say this about Brian Hagedorn, fortunately, on some election-related things, cases, especially the most important, which was certifying the election of Joe Biden, who won the presidential primary by 20,000 votes, he stood tall. So I have to give him a shout out about that. However, on this other stuff, on gerrymandering, he started to stand tall. He voted to adopt Evers maps in a 4-3 decision. The U.S. Supreme Court struck that down. The U.S. Supreme Court is operating as an arm of the Republican Party. You must understand that. And then he went back, and I guess he thought he had no choice. But anyway, this is what is happening. But in the process of that gerrymandering playing out, it really hurts the quality of candidates each party is putting forward. Each party is putting forward for the legislature. What do I mean by that? You know, in the Republican primary now, you can't have somebody who's going to say, well, I'm a moderate, and I think Trump is no good, and this Stop the Steal business is a fraud. If he says that, he's not going to win. She's not going to win. And so they tiptoe around it, and you try to read tea leaves, and you try to read, well, who is using words that seem to convey moderation and trying to slip in that way? On the Democratic side, you have primaries in which there's a race to the bottom on who can be the most identity politics oriented. Most people running would not have supported Joe Biden in the primary because they thought he was too moderate, and he's turned out to be a great president. But you would not get the kinds of legislators we have in Madison right now and in Milwaukee if there were competitive seats. In other words, if these seats were 51-49 seats around the state, and if they were 51-49 in Milwaukee and Madison, what you'd have is a lot more voters who would take a much harder look at some of these characters that are running. And then when they get in, they just basically recite gospel. And the Democratic side about identity politics, and the Republican side by destroying our democracy and worshiping Trump. So that is a very unpleasant side effect of gerrymandering. The worst part of gerrymandering, of course, is you get guaranteed Republican majorities for 20 years in the century. And I'll tell you what, in the year 2030, with a Republican legislature again, they'll do it again. And it's going to depend on the Wisconsin Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court. But if what happens then is what happened now, you'll have another 10 years to the year 2040 of gerrymander and stagnation and attack on our democracy in this state. That's what you're going to have. So I'm just calling it like it is. But Bob Donovan is a twig in a raging river getting carried downstream. But he's a congenial guy, a colorful guy, long Democratic background. Now he says he's a Republican. I don't know what he is. I think he could get into office, and if he gets into office, yeah, there will be some fireworks over in Madison. Turning to somebody who is less likable anyway, personally, Vladimir Putin. This is really sad. This guy is paranoid. He fears assassination. He's holed up. He meets at tables that are 50 feet long. Even with Sergey Lavrov, his foreign minister, secretary of state, afraid of assassination, afraid somebody will pull out a gun, afraid somebody will shake his hand and have a little dab of polonium in a handkerchief that goes on him and kills him. Easter in Russia, in the Eastern Orthodox Church, Easter is a week later than Eastern Western tradition. So Easter this year was April 24th in Eastern Orthodox communities and in Russia. And they put out this video, and you really got to look at this thing. This is sad, sad photoshopping. They had Putin in church, and they had the patriarch up there in their magnificent robes, and I really loved the service. It was a lot of fun to watch. Anyway, the patriarch is blessing everybody using incense, and Putin makes the sign of the cross, and he looks like he's in church. Turns out he wasn't in church. It was Photoshopped. And I'll tell you what, people who are listening to this, who are even taking rudimentary communications courses in any campus in this state, would have done a better job. He's sitting there kind of looking around without context. And it's like those old Photoshopping attempts. You know, the Chinese did it 30 years ago, and they'd have a 7-foot party leader standing next to a 2-foot peasant, or they'd have a whole bunch of people shouting, you know, for Mao Zedong, and they're all standing 2 feet off the ground. You know, this is the kind of stuff these guys do. The Ruskies, what? The Ruskies can't afford to Photoshop a little better than this. The dude is standing there looking pious, and he's in some frames, he's not in some frames. Does he think that he is going to fool, forget the CIA. Do you think he's going to fool, you know, anybody watching this? Clown, venomous, disease-carrying rat. Okay, we're going to break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, not everything that Putin does is as obvious and crazy as Photoshopping himself in church in a really clumsy way. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't Photoshop men in the patriarch's robes blessing everybody. I mean, the guy's ego knows no bounds, and I do not understand why these people, and this frequently is in communist countries, but in a case like Russia, now run by the Russian mafia, it might as well be a communist country because they all were before, and they think they can put on anything on television and people are going to believe it. They may believe it in Russia, but they're not going to believe it in the West, looking at this clown pretending to be pious. But in any event, not everything he does, obviously, is as humorous or possibly benign as that. There's another false flag accusation he's hurling at the CIA and at Western intelligence services in general. And he is accusing the CIA, the US, and Western intelligence services of conspiring with Ukraine to assassinate a senior Russian propagandist on TV named Vladimir Soloyev. Vladimir Soloyev. Vladimir Soloyev is a despicable individual. He's an anchor. He would sort of be, I suppose, a cross between Tucker Carlson and OAN, you know, continuously lying, stirring up trouble, in effect, stirring up violence. And he's one of the guys that goes on and is the most extreme. And he'll regularly say that the West had better watch out in Ukraine because a nuclear war is possible. And by the way, Sergey Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, the equivalent of the Secretary of State, sort of the number two guy in Russia. Yeah, I know Dmitry Medvedev is the president and is technically number two, but Lavrov's the guy that's getting the publicity. And he even came out yesterday, early this morning, actually, and said, well, you should not discount the risk of nuclear war. Now, if there is somebody saying stuff like that, they are insecure, is a polite way to put it. They are failing in their war effort in Ukraine. They know it. They've been ostracized. They're international pariahs, international skunks. Nobody wants them in the picnic. And they're backed into a corner. But anyway, this Vladimir Soloyev is a guy who shoots his mouth off, sort of like a Tucker Carlson. That's why Tucker Carlson's broadcasts are regularly shown in Russia. And they're told, everybody over there is told, that this is an example of what all Western media thinks about Biden and thinks about defending Ukraine. And he's the one that very regularly will say, well, you know, let's be careful about nuclear war. Well, let's take a good look at the evidence that they're putting out. Let's take a good look at the evidence. First of all, they claim that they have an incriminating note from one of the assassins, one of the would-be assassins. And they have an agency called the Federal Security Service, the FSS, which is the KGB. They just gave it different initials because the KGB has such a bad reputation. Putin was a high-up guy in the KGB. They regularly murder people, torture people. They regularly hack into... Well, look, who do you think hacked into the 2016 election? Who do you think engineered the election of Donald Trump in a very close election? Who do you think did all that stuff? Who do you think interfered and hacked into the election in the UK where they got out of the EU, disrupting the unity of the European Union by a very small margin? It was the Ruskies, and it was the KGB, which is now the Federal Security Service. Well, the Federal Security Service put out this note they said was from one of the assassins. It's an incriminatory note. And where there should have been a signature, somebody on the FSS, read KGB, wrote the words, quote, signature unclear. Signature unclear. They wrote it. The guy who supposedly wrote the note didn't write it. Instead of, they then claimed that it was an illegible signature. So helpfully they deleted the signature and put signature unclear. Well, this is rudimentary. If you're submitting a document in court and you think it's relevant, incriminating, whatever, and the signature is illegible, you submit the whole document with whatever looks like an illegible signature. Maybe somebody else can penetrate it. Maybe somebody else can figure it out. But you see the context. You don't delete it and then just type in or write in your own handwriting, signature unclear. Judge will go, well, what do you mean? Well, you just trust me, Judge, it was unclear. Well, how do you know that you're not the guy that typed up the thing in the first place? That's what's going on. This is so clumsy, so clumsy. And then the FSS misunderstood an instruction that was supposedly in this thing. And it was, the instruction said, buy 3 cell phone SIM cards, SIM. And the FSS went out and bought 3 copies of a computer game called The Sims. Now, you know, who does this stuff, okay? Who says he's in church? I mean, I don't care if the guy's in church on Easter, you know? That's his call. That's his call. What do I care? But if you're going to do it, you don't Photoshop yourself in looking pious. And then if you are going to, this is real rudimentary, real rudimentary. If you are going to falsely say that there was an assassination plot involving Ukraine, the CIA, the U.S., and Western intelligence, and you put out an supposedly incriminating note, and on the signature line, you type in illegible signature, take my word for it, instead of whatever you thought was the illegible signature, and then you look at the instruction that says buy 3 cell phone SIM cards, and you go out or have you say somebody's gone out, bought 3 copies of the computer game The Sims. You know, come on, guys, how rudimentary is this? How rudimentary is this? Putin is desperate, and obviously you don't want a desperate man resorting to nuclear weapons. On the other hand, what are you going to do if this guy? What? Let's say we let him get away with this in Ukraine. He goes into Moldova. Then he goes into Finland and Sweden. And actually, then what he does is he goes into Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, and Poland, and he finds 3 guys who speak Russian on the border. He goes, oh, these are Russian speakers. We got to liberate them. Got to liberate them. And even if the guy screams, no, I don't want to be liberated, they'll put a gag on him and drag him into Russia. That's what they did in Estonia. They did. Kidnapped a guy in Estonia some years ago. Russian speaker. They said, we have a right to kidnap Russian speakers wherever we want. So they did. In the Donbass, in Ukraine, they go, oh, they're Russian speakers. One problem. Those Russian speakers don't want to be, quote, liberated, end quote. They are taking up arms alongside their fellow Ukrainians, and they say, we're Ukrainians first. We don't want the commie Ruskies coming in here and destroying our culture. And in Transnistria, most people haven't heard of Transnistria. It's in Moldova, just to the west of Ukraine. And there's some Russian speakers. So Russia goes, oh, there's an independent Republic of Transnistria. Guys in Transnistria go, we don't want to be an independent republic. These disease-carrying rats are trying to spread a toxic criminal culture throughout Eastern Europe. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Taking care of business. Taking care of business. Taking care of business. Every day. Taking care of business. Every way. Taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business. Working overtime. Woo! Taking care of business. Your app. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. You can go back to Wisconsin. A lot of news breaking in Wisconsin. Tim Michaels, a Republican candidate for governor, launched his campaign yesterday. Now, Tim Michaels, I've talked about him before, and why am I even mentioning the Republican primary for governor? Because it's one of the two major primaries in the state going on right now. The other one is the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate to take on Ron Johnson. And that's a must win. Ron Johnson, in that one, Ron Johnson cannot continue to serve as senator from this state. Ron Johnson has sided with Trump in betraying our country to Putin. People focus on things like the crazy stuff he says about COVID and, you know, he's for ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and he's an anti-vaxxer and an anti-masker. Okay, yeah, all of that. But it's a lot deeper than that. It's really a lot deeper than that. It's a lot deeper than that. And what's going on is that if he gets back in, you are simply going to have a vote in the Senate for six more years that really betrays Wisconsin, betrays the United States. There's the guy that went to Moscow, Russia on 4th of July, 2018, have secret meetings. With whom? Let's see a transcript, Ron. Let's see a transcript. We've got to take him on that. But Michaels is the guy who is the only one that may have a shot at looking like a moderate. His company is a big company, 8,000 employees, $3 billion in revenue in 2018. And the only issue in the Republican primary, and the lines are lighting up, I'm going to go right to the lines in a second. The only issue in that primary to me, every election, like every jury trial, boils down to one thing. You know, is this witness lying or not? In this case, it's, will you stand up for American and Wisconsin democracy? Tim Ranthan, Kevin Nicholson, and the Duchess of Foxconn, Lady Clayfish, are all pro-MAGA, pro-big lie. Will Michaels emerge as being anti-big lie and just say right out, we lost that last election, try to do better next time. We are going to preserve our democracy. I will veto any bill that takes away the right to vote for president from the voters of Wisconsin. Sticks it in a gerrymandered legislature. If he says that, he'll win the primary, and then the Republican Party will be safe for a while. And then in the general election, I think Evers will win. But the fact is that we cannot have the possibility of a Ranthan, Nicholson, or Duchess of Foxconn being governor of this state. Going to the lines, Allie of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today, Allie?
Hi, Matt. Good morning. This is kind of like a different topic, but since we're talking about despicable liars, I was wondering about the Build Back Better, about Sinema and Manchin. I I thought I heard something about Biden kind of petitioning. I can't remember what it was called, but something so that just those two people don't have total control, you know, to make these decisions. Because most of his, you know, most of the party votes with him almost all of the time. So,
right.
Do you know what that, can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about that. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Allie, because that was a topic of conversation, especially before the Ukraine invasion by Russia, which is obviously taken up, and appropriately so, a great deal of discussion. But before that, it was really Build Back Better. And there were two of them. There was the hard infrastructure, which is bridges, roads, airports, water systems, rural broadband. And that was one where ultimately 19 Republicans even signed on. So here's the dilemma, and here's what you're talking about. The dilemma is the Republican Party votes against Trump, votes against Biden, basically to injure him, and they don't care about America. They really don't. So even if it's something good for America, if they think that by losing the vote, Biden will be weakened, they will vote to weaken Biden. That means we need all 50 Democrats. And then Kamala Harris comes in and breaks the tie, a 50-50 tie. And there's a special budget rule that says you can use a process called budget reconciliation. So even though normally there's a filibuster and it would take 67 votes to overturn it, and you're not going to have Republican votes to get to 67, if it's budget related, you can do it with 50 plus one. So what Manchin and Sinema have done, and I really don't understand Sinema, to be very honest with you, Allie, the Sinema was when she was in the Democratic Party early on before she went in the Senate, she was to the way to the left of center on virtually every issue. And the stuff she said would have been very well received in Madison right now. She did a 180 when she got into the Senate because she wants to get reelected. And I think she's making a big mistake, because when you try to suck up to the other side, to the right wing, they don't love you for it. They don't even like you for it. They sneer at you, and they take what they can get out of you, and then they dump you. And I think that's what's happening to her. She's got to be very careful. She would have been a lot better if she just stuck by her guns, like, say, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, and just said, hey, yeah, I'm in a somewhat conservative state. Here's what I believe. And he wins in Ohio. Because people like authenticity and they like the truth. So, but she and Manchin basically said, we're not going to do the soft infrastructure part of Build Back Better. The soft infrastructure was not the hard infrastructure. It wasn't roads, airports, you know, it wasn't water systems, it wasn't bridges. Soft had to do with things like expanding Obamacare and Medicare, things like childcare. Helping families with low incomes in terms of child care, which would have prevented rampant child abuse in some areas and also permitted single moms to go back to work and so forth. And there were other aspects of the soft infrastructure too. Both Sinema and Manchin did this kind of weird dance where they kept hinting that they might go along with it, teasing. It was a tease. And every time Biden or Pelosi or Schumer try to make an accommodation, they go, oh, well, that's a productive step, but maybe we could do this. I said early on, Allie, that I don't believe either one of them is in good faith on that. I don't think either one of them ever would vote for soft infrastructure. And we were right. I mean, she finally said, I'm not going to vote for any tax increase that would support any of it. And that right there is a several-trillion-dollar expenditure that without any revenue support. And then Manchin goes finally at the end, no, I'm not going to vote for it. So I think what Biden is looking at is a couple of things. And let's take one. I mean, one of them is the big kahuna is what happens in November. If we add two Democratic senators, then it really doesn't matter what the two of them do, because then we'll have 52 senators, and even if they go wobbly, we would win. On the other hand, if we stay 50-50, I think what he has in mind is doing as much of this as possible by executive order. Now, an executive order is a, you know, it's an ill-defined thing, and it's ultimately subject to the U.S. Supreme Court's interpretation. Of course, sadly, this is a right-wing U.S. Supreme Court, 6-3 Republican, that frequently looks like it's, especially when they weaken the Voting Rights Act and that kind of thing, or eliminate, what they want to do is eliminate the Voting Rights Act through some kind of constitutional juggling. They are just acting in the service of the Republican Party. So who knows what happened, but what he could do and what some people have said he should do is start to implement the soft infrastructure, Build Back Better, things like childcare, things, other kinds of things, and just do it by fiat, do it by executive order. Now, obviously, we don't want a Republican president in the future doing things by executive order that the people don't want. And so there are judicial questions here. But there are some things people believe that he can do, especially with the Affordable Care Act. And it's a little tougher on childcare because that will have an economic impact. And the Constitution is clear that the Congress are the ones that raise the money and for expenditures. But the push in our party is for Biden to do it, to stand up and do it right now. And if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns him, okay, so what? It just puts it on the radar in front of everybody, and people are going to go, hey, wait a minute, Cinnamon Mansion, hey, wait a minute. Not dissimilar from what Franklin Roosevelt faced when he got elected in 1932. He put in the New Deal. And the New Deal, you know, there are going to be limits on child labor. There is going to be limits on the workday. There was going to be minimum wage and a lot of other things that, believe it or not, didn't exist. And the U.S. Supreme Court was just like now Republican, and they all said it was unconstitutional. They pulled it right out of thin air. I mean, who the hell are they? And they said it's unconstitutional. What happened then was Roosevelt stood up to them. He was a good orator. He said, I'm going to pack the court and put more of you guys on there. Everybody had a big howl about it, but he kept attacking. And finally they caved because they realized that what he was doing was popular. And there's an old saying that's very true is, quote, the Supreme Court follows the election returns, end quote. In other words, even though they're supposed to interpret the Constitution and even though people think that's like physics or chemistry and it's graven in stone, well, no, it's not. And when they start to realize that they're getting out ahead of everybody and they're becoming unpopular, then they change their minds. Well, in this case, they don't feel that they're getting out in front of everybody or changing their minds because they have a right-wing base. Long story short, the only way, if we put this stuff to a vote again and Manchin send them a vote against it, soft infrastructure I'm talking about, we're going to get 48 votes and the other side is going to get 52. And even if Manchin Sinema abstain, still the Republicans will have 50 and we will have 48 and it ain't going to pass. And you can talk till you're blue in the face about how, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. Yeah, I've heard this before. They're not going to do it. They flat out aren't going to do it. The only way to do it without adding two more Democratic senators in November, the only way to do it is for Biden just to do it by executive order and let the chips fall where they may. And I hope he does do that. He has good lawyers at the White House. They can figure out what they can construe as not totally revenue related and get around the constitutional question of Congress raising money and just do it and do it and just continue the bully pulpit. In fairness, he's also facing the war in Ukraine, so he has a lot on his plate. Listen, Allie, thanks a lot for calling in. Going to break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Take me home to the place. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Sam, are there any local headlines that have caught your eye that you think we should talk about?
Well, Matt, thank you for asking. I was really looking at getting your opinion on the violent weekend that happened in Milwaukee this past weekend. Mayor Cavalier Johnson made a statement about it yesterday, as well as a couple other officials. And it was one of the last nice weekends. So a lot of people were out, and there was a report of 3 homicides and 19 victims of non-fatal shootings across 20 incidences. Cavalier Johnson said it's disgusting. No kid in the city or anywhere in the state or anywhere in this country should have to live in an environment like that. It takes us in the government, and it also takes folks out there in the community to do their part as well.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That's a profound. Let me hit that right now before we go to the lines. Let me hit that right now. Here's the way I look at this. It's true there were these shootings in Milwaukee, and sadly, if you go to Chicago, it's exponentially higher. I mean, you can multiply it. Here's the way my view is this. In 1917, there were terrible race riots in Detroit and elsewhere, and it resulted in some reforms. About 50 years later, in 1967, there were terrible race riots in Milwaukee and elsewhere. You may remember them. Well, we're now 55 years beyond 1967, and I think there's a cyclical nature to this, that people, when they're socially segregated and discriminated against, it builds up, builds up, builds up, builds up, and finally explodes. And we have to do everything we can to stop it from exploding. Now, obviously, there are some things you can do, like have some sensible laws that say that you can't buy ghost guns. You can't buy guns in a parking lot at night from some bald guy in a raincoat who goes, psst, you want to buy a gun, you know, that kind of stuff. And we have to be able to make sure that there's training for people that do have weapons. We have to make sure that the truth is that you can't just have people who are mentally ill, felons, anybody who wants to get one now, and kids. But right now, everybody has access to a gun, quite frankly, including 13-year-olds. And I think ultimately, in the short run, there are mechanical responses, obviously, on the access to guns, especially by young people. But on the other hand, I think ultimately, as society is looking at a cyclical coming to this event, in other words, coming to recognition of it, another 50 years, and you think about this, and I'm saying this to everybody who's listening to this show. How integrated is your social circle? Who do you play cards with? Who do you hunt with? Who do you fish with? Who do you hang with? Who do you go out for pizza with? Seriously, who comes over to your house? And the truth is that we are still racially, socially segregated, even though legally we may not be. And if that continues, people feel bad. And these kids in Milwaukee that are doing this know that a lot of people aren't happy to see him walk in the room, frankly. You know, in other words, nobody's accepting them. And you can't force anybody to accept anybody, but what we can do is change the national discourse to come to that result. That's why Trump's presidency, among other things, was so damaging, because it wasn't just that he betrayed us to Putin, but there was a clear racial dimension to it. And they can't nominate him again. They really can't. They got to nominate somebody, who, even if he's a conservative on taxes, who says, who has a generous spirit, who's a generous spirit. If you have people in power in this country who are sending racial messages, that's going to accelerate the next tension. That's my view of it. That's not a satisfactory answer. Obviously, getting control of guns from juveniles is. But in the long run, I'm talking about societal and institutional reforms that we need. We're going to the lines. Joe of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling, Joe. What's in your mind?
Well, I would just segue from what you're saying about the harms brought by the Trump administration, including this inciting racial tensions, to go back to Senator Johnson and comments that I wanted to make about that. And there are many things that are bothersome or are extremely worrisome about Senator Johnson in terms of his views on how the state should go forward, you know, his lack of support of jobs, for example, in Wisconsin. But one I would like to mention would go back to January 6th. and the effort that he made to whitewash what happened there, his refusal to call it an insurrection, his refusal to call it violent, and instead he and his staff called it a largely peaceful event because, quote, some people were staying within the roped lines that were set up. All you have to do is look at the footage of people beating in the windows, people beating cops. Images exist in which it was quite clear that this was not a peaceful at all. And the fact that over 800 people have been charged with crimes, now it's true they haven't all been convicted because that hasn't gone through the process, but only somebody who's, you know, only someone who seeks to whitewash this event would call it a peaceful event. And I think that kind of lack of accuracy is so deleterious to us. You saw it with Trump with his over 30,000 lies when he was in his administration. And the same things exist with Johnson. We at least have to describe things as to what they are. And when people are beating cops with flagpoles, when people are shooting hornet and wasp spray into the eyes of cops, that is not a peaceful demonstration. And the fact that over 800 people have been charged and they're still going forward with charging people tells you that it was not a peaceful event. And I just, man, to at least be accurate is an important thing in our cultures or in our political sphere. So thanks, Matt, I appreciate the chance to talk.
Yeah, that was very eloquent, and you're absolutely correct. I'll even build on it because I think it's such an important point. Ron Johnson gives the appearance of affability and, you know, gives the appearance of, he speaks deliberately and all that kind of stuff. But what he says is toxic because he also said, Joe, if it had been Black Lives Matter, I would have felt differently. He said that. Now, that just threw a racial thing into it, right? Where did that come from? That threw a racial thing into it. The second thing that he said was that it was just, you know, basically a bunch of fellas letting off some steam, peaceful and that kind of thing. Not only are you right that the video contradicts that, but five people died. A woman was trampled to death by the mob. Another woman was shot by law enforcement as they were trying to break in to kill congressmen. An officer was down on the ground being kicked to death. And he shouted out, I have four kids. And then a few people protected him. He would have been kicked to death. And he was badly injured. Other cops, they had bear spray squirted in their eyes, but they also were dragged down the stairs. And if you drag somebody down the stairs by their ankles, their heads bump against the thing. And more than 130 officers were out with various disabilities. A mob attacked law enforcement. There was a gallows set up. Hang Mike Pence. They went through the hallways saying, hang Mike Pence. They weren't kidding. They weren't letting off steam. Where'd the gallows come from? Who built it? They didn't build it in 5 minutes. That was planned. Then they went through going, oh, Nancy Pelosi, an 80-year-old woman who weighs about, you know, 100 pounds. If they had found her, they would have killed her. That was a homicidal mob. Mitt Romney had to run away. Pence had to run away. It was a homicidal mob. It was a violent attempt to overthrow a government, to stop the transition, the peaceful transmission of power pursuant to an election. And Ron Johnson whitewashed it and said it was a bunch of fellas letting off steam. Lawful protest. That was false. And the thing is, he says it in an affable, low-key manner, and everybody goes, oh, okay, well, no, we're not going to let him get away with that. Not going to let him get away with that. Joe, thanks a lot for calling in. Great comment. Going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. In a big ball.